This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Slamming a statement by the GCC in Russia, Tehran stresses its indisputable sovereignty over the three Persian Gulf islands. Global wheat prices go up as Moscow terminates a grain deal with Ukraine, allowing export of grain via the Black Sea during the war. Amid tensions on the Korean Peninsula, Pyongyang rejects Washington's offer of talks as a ploy. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us right here to Iran, where the Iranian foreign minister has strongly criticized a statement by Russia and the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council regarding Iran's sovereignty over the three Persian Gulf islands. Hossein Amir Abdullahian stressed that Iran will never compromise its sovereignty, territorial integrity, and independence. He said Iran has found Russian explanations insufficient. The statement called for talks to discuss the sovereignty of the territories, which the United Arab Emirates claims but have been historically part of Iran. The Iranian foreign minister made the remarks in a press conference with his Omani counterpart in Tehran. Amir Abdullahian described Tehran-Muscat relations as outstanding, strategic, and robust. He said the volume of trade between Iran and Oman has increased 2.5-fold in the past 2 years. The Omani foreign minister, for his part, called for the development of economic trade and cultural ties between the two countries. He added that Iran and Oman see eye to eye on many issues. Well, wheat prices surge after Russia announces its exit from a landmark deal that allowed Ukraine to export grain through the Black Sea. Wheat futures jumped 3%, while corn and soybean prices also rose. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov has said Russia will not renew the pact that expires today. He, however, added as soon as Moscow's demands are met in the agreement, it will immediately return to the deal. Peskov stressed the deadly Kerch Bridge attack had nothing to do with its withdrawal. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says Kiev is ready to continue exports despite Russia's exit from the deal. Meanwhile, the EU has condemned Russia's decision.
This is something very serious that will create a lot of troubles to many people around the world. We, from our side, we will do everything we can through our solidarity lanes in order to make available the Ukrainian grain for the people who eat from it. And I have to blame Russia for this decision, completely unjustified, weaponizing the hunger of the people.
The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen described Russia's suspension as a cynical move. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N. called Russia's exit an act of cruelty, while the White House urged Moscow to immediately reverse its decision. A senior Russian official, however, stressed that the decision is final and no more talks are planned. The deal brokered by Turkey and the UN in July of last year aimed to relieve a global food crisis. The UN was to help Russia with its exports during the war in return for the safe export of Ukrainian grain. But Moscow says none of its requirements have been met. Meanwhile, Moscow has condemned the explosion of a key bridge linking Russia with Crimea as a, quote, Ukrainian terrorist attack. The Russian Foreign Ministry says the West may be involved in Monday's attack, which has left two people dead. The ministry added that if proven, the West's involvement in the operation, it would confirm its complicity in Ukraine's other terrorist activities. Earlier, the ministry's spokesman had claimed Ukrainian decisions were made with the direct involvement of intelligence agencies and politicians from the U.S. and the U.K. Meantime, the Ukrainian media has quoted unnamed sources as saying the nighttime attack was conducted by Ukraine's security service and navy. They said unmanned surface vessels were used to attack the bridge. Kiev has not yet commented on the incident, but Ukrainian officials had earlier portrayed the bridge as a legitimate military target. The bridge is a vital supply route for Russia. Our correspondent in Moscow, Johnny Miller, says the attack on the bridge may escalate the war in Ukraine, as it's highly likely that the Kremlin comes up with a grave response.
Well, it looks like Ukraine has hit the bridge with some kind of drone or some kind of missile. It's not clear yet, but it looks very clear that Ukraine has hit this bridge. They've been trying for some time. And it looks like they have succeeded. Vladimir Putin, as I understand, is in an emergency meeting to discuss what Russia's response will be. The damage itself is relatively light. It won't be too hard for Russia to repair. What the fear of this event, though, is that it could well bring another escalation. Of course, Ukraine hit the bridge, we think, last year, and Russia's response to that, Russia sees an attack on the Kerch Bridge as an attack on Russia itself. So Russia's response to that, if we remember, was for Russia to launch large-scale missile strikes on Ukrainian energy infrastructure. It's very hard for Russia to defend all of its territory. They have very effective air defense, but air defense isn't guaranteed to stop everything. So as long as this war continues, Russian mainland, if you like, is going to be vulnerable for attacks. There's no doubt about that. So that's why you have many Russians calling for the only way for this war to end is to completely dismantle Ukraine's ability to carry on hitting Russian territory, because if they continue to be able to, they will do so.
More than two decades after the U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan, many Afghans are still suffering from the devastating effects of U.S. cluster bombs. Some of these explosives fail to detonate on impact, leaving a deadly legacy that continues to kill and maim civilians, especially children. Our correspondent Rahmatullah Baghban reports from Kabul.
Ukraine has been requesting cluster munitions.
As the U.S. is sending cluster bombs to Ukraine, the deadly legacy of these destructive U.S. weapons continues to take its toll on civilians in other countries, including Afghanistan. According to Human Rights Watch, the U.S. dropped more than 1,200 cluster bombs containing tens of thousands of bombless in Afghanistan in the first 3 years of its invasion of the country. As a result, hundreds of Afghan people were killed, wounded, or maimed forever.
It was 10 p.m. when bombardment started on our house. I was targeted with an American bomb while fleeing the bombardment. I lost my feet and my hand was injured. Since then, I have been living a terrible life.
The Taliban's official for martyrs and disabled affairs also says the U.S. war on Afghanistan has created many victims, especially from cluster bombs.
Most martyrs, disabled and maimed people registered by our administration are harmed by the U.S. indiscriminate strikes and cluster bombs. The U.S. used to claim they were targeting Taliban fighters, but their destructive war machines destroyed an entire village and left no civilian unharmed.
Military experts have warned that unexploded cluster bombs across Afghanistan are still posing a serious threat to the lives of innocent people, including school children, shepherds, and farmers.
War was ongoing in all 34 provinces of Afghanistan. Cluster bombs were dropped by NATO and American forces in most places. I'm sure that they're not cleared yet, especially in the outskirts of the cities, mountainous in conflict areas. They pose a serious threat to civilians there. International bodies and NGOs, as well as the Taliban, should solve the problem as soon as possible.
Afghan people urge the international community to prevent the use of cluster bombs globally and hold the U.S. accountable for their war crimes in Afghanistan. The U.S. left Afghanistan 2 years ago, but its unexploded bombs are still here, posing threat to the lives of innocent people. Afghans are calling for justice and support from the international community. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Well, Tehran says it has lodged an official protest with Russia over its joint statement with the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council about Iran's three islands in the Persian Gulf. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said unconstructive political stances will not change anything about Iran's sovereignty over the islands. Nasser Kanani added that the issue is non-negotiable. The foreign ministry has also summoned Russia's ambassador to Tehran and voiced objection to the statement. A recent joint statement by the Persian Gulf Arab states and Russia called for talks to discuss the sovereignty of the territories. Iran has repeatedly rejected the United Arab Emirates' claims over the three Persian Gulf islands of Abu Musa, the Greater and Lesser Tombs. Tehran says they have been part of Iran throughout history and will remain so. Masoud Chajadeh, a political commentator in London, says Russia, being under the pressure of war, should be the last country to undermine the integrity of other countries.
We know Russia is under pressure by the West. But, you know, if anything, Russia is talking about historical parts of Russia and trying to sort of ensure the integrity of their borders. And this is why we have the issues of Ukraine. So Russia should be the last one to sort of try to undermine the historical sort of borders of Iran or anywhere else. I think the reality is that this day and age is not a time to carve out countries and so forth and undermine the border integrity of any nation, but how nations should come together to address their common interest, security, economically, socially, and politically. And any attempt to undermine that, it really will be undermining the future of those nations and the region. Russia, being under the pressure that it is, should indeed recognize and support the integrity of the borders of every nation, including Iran.
Now to North Korea, which has warned against what it calls Washington's provocative acts that can put the U.S. security at risk. Kim Yo-jung, the sister of the North Korean president, slammed Washington's attempts to increase its so-called extended deterrence by deploying a nuclear-powered submarine near the Korean Peninsula. She also rejected an offer by the U.S. for talks as a ploy, saying Washington is delusional to think it can achieve the disarmament of Pyongyang. Kim also warned against the U.S.'s, quote, foolish acts that would only push Pyongyang further away from the negotiating table. Well, the remarks came after the White House expressed worries about Pyongyang performing another intercontinental ballistic missile test. And the North fired an ICMB last week in response to the deployment of Washington's nuclear-powered submarine near the Korean Peninsula. And now turning to South Korea, where a total of 13 bodies have so far been recovered from a flooded tunnel after heavy rainfalls triggered deadly floods and landslides in the country. Rescuers are racing against time to find people still missing who are feared dead 48 hours after the incident. It saw a broken levee submerge a tunnel in the central city of Cheongju, trapping at least 15 vehicles, including a bus. Flash floods and landslides have wreaked havoc in southern parts of South Korea since Thursday, killing at least 40 people. The devastation prompted President Yoon Suk-yeol to call for a national review of preparedness and response measures. And we end this broadcast with some good news. Iranian under-16 girls have made history by winning the second spot in the Asian Basketball Championships. Now, that's a first for Iran. The Iranian teen girls surged to the final after an all-win streak in the group stage where they faced Malaysia, Singapore, and Guam. They went on to beat Hong Kong 64-58 in a tough semifinal to reach the gold medal match, but they lost it 83-60 to the Philippines to settle for the runner-up spot and the silver medal. Zahra Bazubandi was Iran's most efficient player in the final with 6 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, and 4 steals. Now, this is the first time the Iranian teen girls achieved a silver medal in the Asian competitions. A wonderful job, girls, and congratulations. And with that, it brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thanks so much for staying with us.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Economic Divide.
Argentina has made a bold decision and will pay part of its loan in the Chinese yuan. That's right. And guess who is going to be making that payment to? Washington-based IMF. What is the significance? How does it impact the yuan or the dollar, for that matter? Is this the start of a new trend? Stay tuned as we explore some of these angles and look at why the IMF has had a negative role instead of a positive one when it comes to other countries' economies. Some of the headlines coming up. Argentina's loan repayment in loan is made in dollars, but the repayment in yuan. What does that exactly mean? To preserve its reserves? And is it a new trend? India has followed suit. Then we're going to take a look at the rise of the yuan. It has increased in popularity. Other nations may go ahead and pay IMF debt in the yuan. That's a possibility. And of course, what is the impact on the dollar? That's very important. And rounding off our headlines, alternative credit source. Okay, what does that mean? A move away from the IMF to what? The BRICS New Development Bank. That is a sign of a new world order.
Argentina is a country in South America, and it has been in a financial crisis for some time. It is facing its worst economic crisis since the Depression of 1998 to 2002, when unemployment climbed above 20% and more than half of the population slid below the poverty line. The South American country struck a $57 billion loan deal with the IMF in 2018, which failed, and was replaced last year with a new $44 billion program. Country has been a serial defaulter that has struggled for years with inflation and a currency crisis. But short on greenbacks, the South American nation has paid part of its IMF loan with Chinese yuan. Buenos Aires made its latest payment on its $44 billion loan to the International Monetary Fund using a stock of special drawing rights, SDRs, and Chinese yuan. SDRs are an asset within the IMF created to supplement countries' official reserves. For the $2.7 billion payment, the country used $1 billion in yuan from a currency swap line with China and $1.7 billion of SDRs. The reason is that domestic economic problems have drained Argentina's dollar reserves, which are reportedly at their lowest level since the year 2016.
Time now to take a look at the social media posts. First, we went to Twitter. Unprecedented. Argentina to pay back IMF's dollar debt with the Chinese yuan. Take that, Peter Zeihan's followers, who like to say that China's currency has no value. The internationalization of the yuan and de-dollarization in one swoop. Next, Justin, Argentina will start to pay for Chinese imports in yuan rather than dollars. And that was as of April 2023, based on this particular entry. Next, we went to a website, the IMF's top 10 biggest debtors. No country owes the fund more money than Argentina, Egypt, and Ukraine. The total global outstanding debt owed to the IMF stood at $155 billion, ending March 31st, 2023, or $115.2 billion special drawing rights. That's those SDRs. Next, and our final entry, we went to a website, Argentinian presidents, and the protesters have slammed the IMF debt. Austerity as economy creaks. How is the economy creaking? Well, the Argentine president, Alberto Fernandez, and protesters in Buenos Aires are pushing back against the IMF amid heightened tensions with the lender as the country faces nearly 109% inflation and dwindling dollar reserves. They said, our worry is that the IMF will meddle in Argentina's own internal issues. Now, this was a protester who said that, by the name of Norma Morales, who defended the government subsidies as essential, especially with poverty levels having risen to around 40%. Well, indeed, obviously, people who are getting the subsidies don't want the IMF in their country because that's one of the things that the IMF does. Let's find out what our guests think about this and more. Joining us is Sol Morel. She is a journalist in Radio Popular Che Guevara, who joins us from Argentina. Sol Morel, welcome to Economic Divide. When you take a look at the fact that Argentina has made its payments in the yuan, this is a first. This is $44 billion loan that it has. How does this impact the dollar and also the yuan for that matter?
Yes, yes, it is. Argentina has canceled $2.7 billion of our debt with the International Monetary Fund, of which $1 billion were in yuan, the Chinese currency. The rest were in special drawing rights. Well, the IMF accepted, since the yuan is one of the five currencies that make up the valuation of special drawing rights, the assets issued by the IMF. It is a demonstration of the growing weight of the yuan in the world economy, and it confirms the relative decline in the importance of the dollar as well. Well, China in recent years has been growing in its international role. We can say that at the beginning of the 21st century, China was incorporated into the World Trade Organization and has been growing in its participation in international organizations.
All right, thank you for that. Let me introduce our next guest and find out if she agrees or not. She is Cynthia Rush. Cynthia Rush is an Ibero-American analyst at the Executive Intelligence Review. Cynthia Rush, welcome to Economic Divide. Argentina has been increasingly turning towards the yuan as an alternative means of payment. As such, do you think that this actually opens the doors for other economies to do the same like Argentina?
Well, it's an immediate survival tactic. It's a way to not to have to depend on the dollar, and countries are also looking for other alternatives to create alternative systems. The broader question is that in itself isn't sufficient in terms of if you're going to create an alternative monetary system or currency system, you have to also find ways to protect your system from that speculative dollar. And then you get into issues like what we know as the Glass-Steagall banking separation, exchange controls, and creating productive credit for investment in real physical economy, physical economic projects, to get economies moving again. So that's, in the immediate sense, yes, countries are looking for using the yuan or the ruble or anything that's not the dollar, because people understand that that system is no good, and the unipolar world that's part of it is decaying.
It's time now for the Info News section of the program. First up, a membership that was finally officialized, and it regards the Islamic Republic of Iran and the SCO. It's official. The SCO has welcomed this newest member to the organization. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi highlighted the benefits of Iran's full membership at this organization, and he said that it's going to go down in history. That's not how important it is. Now, our take on this, aside from Iran's membership in the SCO, Iran is also an observer member at the EEU, the Eurasian Economic Union, and has applied to BRICS, all void of U.S. presence, in an effort to de-dollarize its trade, ditching the dollar, key to shaping fair international system the way Iran sees it. Let's see how that goes. Next up, taking a look at something that's now reaching its peak, and it involves a chip war between the U.S. and China. Now, China has hit back in this war to the U.S., imposing export curbs. This regards crucial raw materials. The names are gallium and germanium, which are used in a variety of products, including computer chips and solar panels. Taking a look at these two minerals, they are on the European Union's list of critical raw materials, which are deemed crucial to Europe's economy. Now, U.S. companies are barred from supplying advanced chips and chip-making equipment to China. One of the reasons? To limit China's military technology advancement. All right, so there you have it. Now, let's take a look at the impact that these protests in France, which are somewhat ongoing, has had on the French economy. France is counting its economic costs. One of the things, the impact that these protesters have had is the looting that occurred. It's affected hundreds of businesses. An initial estimate has put the cost of the damage at around 100 million euros, or $109 million. A deeper look at this, the government should address the root of the problem, which lies in the poor state of the economy in underprivileged areas, home to many blacks and migrants from African descent. Okay, rounding off the list, the rivalry between India and China. That's right. This is something that's worth taking a look at in a very deep way, which we hope to be one of the topics of Economic Divide. Now, India has increased African lending in a race to counter China in that continent. Africa has become the second largest recipient of credit from India. So that shows that how focused India is on Africa. Now, taking a look at it, the way we look at it, India and China's rivalry is actually not only reshaping South Asia, we think the U.S. is actually pushing India to counter China. That is how we see the relationship between India and the U.S. vis-a-vis China.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
It's time now for the in-depth section. Now, in this in-depth section, we are going to look at the way the yuan is finding its place in the world of currencies, especially when it comes to being the currency of choice for more and more countries these days relative to the U.S. dollar, as evident in the Argentinian case. Let's take a look now first at the Chinese yuan's usage, which is soaring in the Argentine business community. As you can see over here, you're looking at 500 companies in Argentina that have requested to pay for their imports using the Chinese currency. Now, China has become Argentina's largest trading partner, so that's natural for that to happen, with bilateral trade volumes reaching new highs. As you can see over here, the imports are being paid by the yuan. Again, a natural occurrence. The deepening economic cooperation has led to increased cross-border transactions, which has prompted the Argentine companies to look for alternatives to their traditional payment methods. So that obviously is something that is one of the consequences in a shift away from the dollar. Now, taking a look at other countries, well, as of May 2023, these are the top 10 countries that we looked at in terms of how they are using the yuan. Examples are Russia, Saudi Arabia, Argentina, obviously Brazil, Bangladesh, Pakistan. They are using the renminbi or the yuan for payments with China. Iran also is in this list. And another country of note is India. These are countries that obviously have economies that are growing strong. Now, some of these countries will be joining trade blocs like BRICS that the usage is surely to even increase further. Now, let's take a look at what is happening over here in terms of the number of countries using the renminbi. This is pretty interesting. More than 100 countries was actually cited to make their payments using the renminbi to China and also to Hong Kong. Now, that's according to SWIFT. SWIFT is the global payment system, in short. Now, these countries are using their renminbi for more than 10% of their direct payments by value with China and also with Hong Kong. All right? And finally, for a milestone for the yuan, let's take a look at what is happening. This is what the yuan has been striving for, obviously, through China. Knocked out the dollar, as you can see over here. Now, the time this occurred was in the month of March, where it overtook the dollar to become the most used currency in China's cross-border transactions. This obviously is the first time that this has happened, and Beijing's efforts to internationalize the use of the yuan, it has paid off, as you can see. Cross-border payments and receipts in the yuan rose to a record $549.9 billion in March from $434.5 billion just a month earlier. And the yuan was used in, percentage-wise, 48.4% of all cross-border transactions, while the dollar share declined to 46.7%, as you can see over here, from a month earlier. Okay, so congratulations to the yuan for that achievement. Let's find out what our guests think about this. And Sol Morel, who's a journalist and radio popular Che Guevara, rejoins us from Argentina. Sol Morel, welcome. I'd like to take a look at the IMF and my question to you. What is the role that it plays? Why is the IMF called turns countries into a debt slave, as was the case in Argentina? And what is the role of the new development bank of BRICS as an alternative?
Yes. First of all, we must say that this debt is illegal, is illegitimate, and is unsustainable. Therefore, it should not be paid without the prior investigation and without considering the internal debt of our country, especially taking into account that our country has more than 40% of the population under the poverty line and a year-on-year inflation of more than 100%. However, the government of Alberto Fernández oriented his management to negotiate the debt and set out to validate all the debt with the agency by signing a new agreement. I mean, we must understand the debt as an element of capitalist domination that has regressive consequences on the working class and the people in general. In this sense, the IMF is an instrument of world domination of the most concentrated financial capital, which also expresses the hegemonic character of the United States.
All right, thank you for that. Obviously, she's talking about the firsthand account that she's experiencing from her country. Let's bring back Cynthia Rush Ibero, American analyst at the Executive Intelligence Review. see what she thinks. Cynthia Rush, welcome back. I'd like to go with the question of the IMF role here when it comes to how it's supposed to help countries, but many citizens around the world actually always come out and protest against it. Why do they not like the IMF, especially if IMF is supposed to help the economy and the alternative being the new development bank of BRICS?
Yeah, well, the BRICS Bank is extremely important, especially because of the new president, Dilma Rousseff, the former Brazilian president, and what she has expressed as making that bank into a global bank, a bank for the developing nations. The IMF long ago ceased to be what was originally intended right after 1945, the Bretton Woods system, ceased to be a credit World Bank part of it, credit institution to provide credit to developing countries so they can actually build their economies and develop. It's now simply a looting mechanism. Take the Argentine example of the loan from 2018, which was originally for $57 billion, the largest loan ever given any country in the history of the IMF, which was nothing more than a political loan arranged with Christine Lagarde to prop up the government of the then president, Mauricio Macri, to try to make sure he got reelected, which fortunately he didn't. That failed. But the IMF system not only doesn't work, but it, as you said, it's a slave system. It's countries get locked into it and they have no way of getting out. You get a new loan, and what do you use the loan for? To pay off your IMF debt, your old debt.
Argentina, like many other nations around the world, are turning away from the U.S. dollar to get away from the hegemony of Washington's currency. Argentina renewed a currency swap agreement with China for 130 billion yuan, which made the Chinese currency freely available in the country, as its intention to allow the country's commercial banks to open customer accounts in yuan. The country has been aspiring to join the BRICS groups of nations in a bid to further weaken the role of the U.S. dollar in its economy. Brazil's President Lula da Silva has played a key role in advocating for Argentina to join BRICS. The weakening of the U.S. dollar in international trade can also diminish the role of the U.S.-dominated International Monetary Fund in making Global South countries dependent on its mechanisms. The IMF has forced harsh spending cuts on cash-strapped countries like Argentina in exchange for bailout loans. That is one of the reasons why many countries are turning to the new development bank of BRICS nations for development projects. The new development bank has already issued bonds denominated in China's currency, the renminbi. The bank is seen as an alternative for U.S.-led institutions. The U.S. has 15.8% voting power in the World Bank Group's lending arm, the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development. No other country even remotely comes close.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. Mahdi Abbasian is off reporting. In this section, we will focus on the IMF and why it is so unpopular, like in the case of Argentina. People have protested against the IMF, the global lender of last resort, as it's called, in country after country that has borrowed from it. The focus, the conditions of its loans. Now, some of the countries who have borrowed from the IMF are Argentina, Ecuador, Tunisia, and Greece, whose citizens are not happy. The citizens of these countries have accused the IMF of promoting debt imperialism and worsening economic inequality. Now, in giving loans to countries, the IMF makes the loan actually conditional on the implementation of certain economic policies. That makes sense. Now, some of these policies, which are controversial, include government borrowing reduction, higher taxes and lower spending, higher interest rates to stabilize the currency, allow failing firms to go bankrupt, and austerity measures. Now, why are these restrictive? The problem is that these policies of structural adjustment and microeconomic intervention, well, it can make difficult economic situations actually worse. Now, in the case of Argentina, the IMF loan did not have a positive impact on its economy. For example, back in 2001, Argentina was forced into this policy of what has been called fiscal restraint. This actually led to a decline in investment in public services in that country, which arguably damaged the economy as a result, which is why Argentinians are not welcoming the IMF into their country. The IMF has also been criticized for imposing policy with little or no consultation with affected countries. This has been something that has been called interference on the part of the IMF in the affairs of another country. This actually happened in the case of South Korea. Jeffrey Sachs, the former head of the Harvard Institute for International Development, said it best, quote, in Korea, South Korea that is, the IMF insisted that all presidential candidates immediately endorse an agreement which they had no part in drafting or negotiating, and they had no time to understand. This is out of hand. It defies logic to believe that a small group of 1,000 economists on 19th Street in Washington should dictate the economic conditions of life to 75 developing countries with around 1.4 billion people. By the way, when it comes to the budget of the IMF, can you guess which country is the largest contributor? Well, if you couldn't, it's the U.S. The U.S. contributes $117 billion to the IMF budget. That's 17.46% of the total IMF budget. In addition, the U.S. has contributed $44 billion to funds at the IMF that supplement quota resources. As of February 11, 2022, the IMF has had total lending commitments around $239.2 billion. All right, that does it for this quick take section. Any comments or questions, please get in touch with us. We would love to hear from you. Argentina's decision to pay back some of its loan in the yuan is most likely a sign of how yuan has increased in its share in the global currency basket, biting into the dollar's share in particular. Countries relying on the yuan as an alternative payment method, well, it's only natural, especially because China, in many of those cases, is their number one trading partner. As for the IMF and the World Bank, for that matter, watch out. BRICS Development Bank is your rival. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for tuning in to Economic Divide. For Mikhail Tavle and the entire team at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran. And we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajah. Brothers and sisters, we were discussing the different constituents of supplication and dua. The third constituent is the Almighty Allah, the one we ask a favor from. We said that in the very first place, we have to recognize the Almighty Allah. And knowing God has different effects on the believers who actually take part in supplication. There is one tradition narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, mentioned in Uddatul Da'i, from his fathers that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had said, Allah the Almighty revealed to one of his prophets concerning his guardians, وَعِزَّتِي وَجَلَالِي لَأَقْتَعَنَّ أَمَلَ كُلِّ آمِلٍ أَمَلَ غَيْرِي بِالْيَأْسِ. I swear by my magnanimity and honor that I will cut the desire and wish of anyone who relies on other than me, and I will deprive him of my favors. وَلَأُبْعِدَنَّهُ مِنْ فَرَجِي وَفَضْلِي. Does my servant rely on other than me during afflictions, whereas the afflictions are in my hands? أَيَأْمُلُ عَبْدِي فِي الشَّدَائِدِ غَيْرِي وَالشَّدَائِدُ بِيَدِي وَيَرْجُو سِوَايِ وَأَنَا الْغَنِيُّ الْجَوَادِ بِيَدِي مَفَاتِيحُ الْأَبْوَابِ. Does he expect other than me while I am the self-sufficient, the praised? I have the keys of the gates which are closed. بِيَدِي مَفَاتِيحُ الْأَبْوَابِ وَهِيَ مُغْلَقَةِ وَبَابِي مَفْتُوحٌ لِمَنْ دَعَانِي. Whereas my gate is open to everyone who calls upon me. The Prophet ﷺ said that Allah the Almighty says, مَا مِن مَخْلُوقٍ يَعْتَسِمُ بِمَخْلُوقٍ دُونِي إِلَّا قَطَعْتُ أَسْبَابَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَأَسْبَابَ الْأَرْضِ مِن دُونِهِ. If a creature resorts to another creature instead of me, I will deprive him of the means of the heavens and the earth. If he asks me for something, فَإِنْ سَأَلَنِي لَمْ أُعْتِهِ, I will not give him, and if he invokes me, وَإِنْ دَعَانِي لَمْ أُجِبْهِ, I will not respond to him. وَمَا مِن مَخْلُوقٍ يَعْتَسِمُ بِي دُونَ خَلْقِي. But if a creature resorts to me rather than any of my creatures, the heavens and the earth will ensure his livelihood. If he calls upon me, I will respond to him. فَإِنْ دَعَانِي أَجَبْتُهُ وَإِنْ سَأَلَنِي أَعْطَيْتُهُ. And if he asks me for anything, I will definitely grant him. وَإِنْ إِسْتَغْفَرَنِي غَفَرْتُ لَهُ. And if he asks me to forgive him, I will forgive him.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo keshti ob onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ob kamju tishnagi ovar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Tabeju shad ovaz balova pas. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the merciful God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah, that we hear, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God speaks with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is in the
indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
In Tafsir al-Mizan, brothers and sisters, mentioning two different traditions which talk about the depriving ones, the ones who resort to other creatures than Almighty Allah, we read, what we understand from these traditions is that supplication should be uttered sincerely. Supplication should not negate the great cause behind all causes. This is because everybody knows that there are causes and effects in this world, but the great cause, the absolute cause, is behind them all. These causes are not independent of the great cause, however. So it means that we should add the fact that man, through his inner nature, knows that for his wants there is a giver, whose actions are under his control, subhanahu wa ta'ala. And he is all aware. He is the absolute cause. So the servant should not resort to anyone other than him. So man recognizes naturally that origin in which all the control rests and the pillar on which he depends to satisfy his desires. These are some things different from these superficial means. It is compulsory for man not to depend entirely on these means alone and not to forget the existence of the absolute cause. This is the point in supplication. This is the point that man has to realize regarding this third constituent, which is the Almighty Allah. Man, with the slightest attention, will comprehend this issue. If he asks for something and his needs are satisfied, he will find out that his asking is really addressed to God. Here, the cause is the Almighty Allah. Now, suppose he asked the same thing from some other cause. He should know that this cause cannot actually satisfy his needs. In this case, a wrong assumption has made him assume the wrong giver as the real one, as the real giver. So he has turned to someone else other than the Almighty Allah, other than someone who can satisfy his needs. In this case, we see that man's inner nature is different from his apparent one. So this is the point we need to understand. The kind of the Almighty Allah that will assure us, and as he says, the heavens and the earth will ensure the livelihood of the person who only resorts to him other than the creatures, other than the things and the creatures he is the absolute cause for. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need by my side. I wish to be close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.